Welcome to this episode of the Fireside Podcast. I'm Hannes again. I'm here with Chris and Phil. Do you want to quickly introduce yourselves?
Hey, sure. I'm Chris. You go for it.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jan-Philipp Reising, recurring guest of Hannes Podcast, PhD student at Karolinska and doing work on neuroscience and respiration.
Hi, I'm Chris. I've appeared on most of the episodes of this podcast now. I'm a chemist formerly at the Karolinska Institute. I now work in diagnostics in Switzerland.
Amazing. I'm so happy to have you guys again. It's a very special episode because this is the last episode of this stretch of the Fireside Podcast. We're going to have a very short episode, and afterwards I have to announce some things. We thought for this short and kind of fun episode, or at least happy episode, I think most episodes have some kind of like more negative notion to it. We call out something that's going wrong in the scientific community or something like that. Chris was often part of that.
It's just us ranting, Hannes.
Yes, it's just us ranting, exactly. Today we don't want to rant today. Today we want to bring a positive science news, some bit. So I asked the other two people to bring one positive science news today. And I've heard Philip didn't really, but we're going to see in a second what he brought. Why don't you start, Chris? You seemed very excited about what you brought.
So it's not news, as in it's not recent research, but given the whole lockdown and everything, I've been watching a lot of new YouTube channels. And one that I got, actually Ashley introduced me to, was this microscopy YouTube channel called Journey to the Microcosmos. And it's brilliant. It's really therapeutic to watch all these little microscopic organisms living. But one of the episodes kind of not freaked me out, but it's just amazing. So there are these things called stentors, which are one of the largest single-celled organisms that can be found, and they're huge. They're bigger than some multicellular organisms. So I don't know if you can picture what a tardigrade is, the little water bears. Mm-hmm. Tardigrades are cool. We can do a whole like podcast on.
They're so weird.
They're
low-tier trash after all, but sure, we can talk about them.
Yeah, but like they survived on the surface of the Hubble Space Telescope or something. Like
that. Yeah, I mean, they can dry out all the way and then be revived, right? That's kind of unique for a multicellular organism.
Yeah,
and but they can the story be like, is not about the tardigrades, right?
Oh yeah, sorry.
True, though.
We'll ignore the tardigrade. Maybe we could do an octopus and tardigrade episode at some point. Mm-hmm. Anyway. It's not about the tardigrades or the octopuses. These stentors are these massive single cells, and they have all the characteristics of multicellular organisms. So they're photoresponsive, they can ingest and eat multicellular organisms themselves, and they seem to like reproduce and eat other things and stuff like this. So common traits that we thought were associated with multicellular organisms, a unicellular organism can accomplish. And that's kind of terrifying because certainly like what stops them being, so they're several microns across, but like what stops them being even bigger? Why can't you have a single cell of like a centimeter inside or something like that?
Wait, so what, several microns is not much, right?
Wait.
For a cell. Like, are you researching?
I'm researching
now,
right now. Well, this research is happening as we speak.
Great. No, so for like, I think as a rule of thumb, you say like a bacterium is roughly 1 micrometer, and a eukaryotic cell is something between 30 and 100.
Okay, I'm an order of magnitude out. They can be up to 2 millimeters in size.
Yeah, I think that Amazing. Makes more sense. They're like almost close to the limit that you can see just by eye, right?
Yeah.
Well, that 2 millimeters we can definitely see. So that's
2 millimeters.
Yeah.
That's so big.
They're can huge. You describe them, how they look?
They're kind of like these trumpet-shaped. They look a bit like a mushroom. Let's say.
I have actually seen that video before. Also, Ashley showed it to me at some point.
We should have Ashley on to tell us about these things.
Yeah, we should. No, stentors are amazing. They look a bit like a trumpet or like a funnel in a way.
Mm, yep.
And isn't this their mouth, this funnel piece?
Yeah, so they track down like other organisms and then like eat them. And so they hunt, basically. They can capture these things in and grab them in and then start to digest them. But I can't conceive of it because, to me, the cell membrane is this, like a balloon, right? Like an encasing to a balloon. And as soon as it pops, the whole cell will like splurge out and just go everywhere. But that's not what happens. The cell wall can break for these things. In fact, you can like cut them apart and each separate bit will regrow into another stentor. It's not, they've not got nuclei in the way we think of nuclei. They're like lots of little polyps of nuclear information all over the thing. So that when you cut it up into like...
They all have all the information, right? They all have the full genome.
So yeah, you can cut them up into bits and those bits will completely regrow into a whole new stenta. And it's crazy. It's just...
It's fascinating.
Everything, like my kind of perception of biology and perception of cellular life and the forces at work in cells... is completely blown apart by this. I now have to rethink how strong the tension of the intracellular network is being able to pull like a cell membrane around to engulf a thing. Like you've seen those videos of white blood cells engulfing cancer cells and stuff like this. Like that I can imagine is really small on the microscale, but at the millimeter scale, those forces, which is what's happening in a stenta, are insane. They're just,
I think as chemists, we often, I'm not sure if I should include myself here, but chemists often think of cells as, in terms of the particle model, that you have like a container and then you have particles inside floating around. It's kind of like, and like proteins find their targets through diffusion. And I guess that's also how it is. But in the end, I've learned, especially in my PhD now, that the cell is very different from how I imagine it, from coming from the particle model.
Yep.
This insanely crowded, so busy, so many things are going on.
Yeah.
It's just very different. And I think your stenta friends here, they illustrate very clearly that we are, at least you just said, you're kind of off with what you thought the cell looks like.
Yeah. I think there was someone described to me like if you were a protein in the cell, and you were trying to find another protein, it would be like being in a crowded train pushing around between people and trying to grab to find the one person you wanted to lock onto. It's not like a free empty room and you two walk together to grab each other.
Yeah.
You have to push past all the other proteins and all the other gunk that's in the way. And it's like quite a viscous environment you're in.
I like how we get again from the stenta, from quite microscopic organisms to...
It's chemistry.
Molecular biochemistry again. We always find a way.
Yeah. Well, it's the stuff we know best, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's pretty fun to have like an edge case where the model or the way you think about something kind of breaks down and you realize, well, it's not a balloon.
Absolutely.
It's like something very different. That's pretty fun. So why does it make you happy? Why does it make you happy? Like why is it like a happy story for you? Just because of the zen of this world?
I think the longer I've gone through studying science and chemistry, the less and less I can be shocked by new information because I've seen something before. I'm like, oh, okay, I've already seen something like this before. This is kind of like bringing me back to areas of my childhood learning something and being like, oh, wow, that is completely
nice.
Insane
like,
out there.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can also watch it on video makes it also more tangible and real. So
the pictures are so beautiful.
Yeah, the video
They're
is incredible.
Amazing. The whole channel, ace.
Can't recommend it more.
All right, I'm going to bring my bit now, which is also something I know very little about. And it's also, again, like Chris, it's not really news, but a topic which we just started following with a lot of excitation and I really hope it becomes a thing very soon. And I'm talking about nuclear fusion. So science news sounded like this was going to be a thing in the next 10 to 20 years as an energy source for us.
It says that every 20 years.
It's always 20 years out, regardless of when you do it. And it's like, it's just 20 years out.
Yeah. And I think everyone is hoping for it, and I don't think I'm alone with this, but I just find it exciting how beautiful the method is. And that's something I only learned about kind of recently. And of course, maybe it's not going to happen in the next 5 or 10 or 20 or 50 years. I really hope it will.
Which flavor of fusion are you going for? Like the Tomahawk reactors?
Okay, you already know more than I do.
Wait, are you going for cold fusion? Because that's like...
No.
That's maybe 1,500 years.
Cold fusion only works on a flat Earth. What I find interesting, or what I learned a while ago, which I didn't know before, I mean, I always kind of knew that this process is a thing and it happens in our sun. And what I find exciting is that while fission is this process which goes on, or it's kind of based on this chain reaction which we have to control, fusion is the exact opposite and we have to put a lot of energy in for it to work and then we get a lot more energy out. But as soon as the thing goes bananas, we don't provide these conditions, which are pressure and temperature anymore, it cannot go sideways, right? And I think that's the nice thing about it, that fusion is basically not dangerous.
That's not true.
Is it not?
No.
I know what you're trying to say, but for example, for fission, it's the same. Like you have to put in energy initially and then it...
But then you start the chain reaction, which you have to contain all the time.
But when you make fusion chain reaction, you're producing a huge amount of energy, which if it escapes, blows the building up.
I don't think that's the case.
No, it does. It blows the building up. But the nice thing about it is that it just blows the building up, but that's it. So there's very little long-term radioactivity, let's say the explosion itself is limited if you compare it to something like an atomic or a nuclear bomb or something.
Mm.
So yeah, I think in terms of safety, it's a lot safer. Yeah. And the potential energy output is also a lot better.
I mean, so to put it in context, the temperatures and pressures you want to get to could only be created inside fission bombs. So you're required to set off a nuclear bomb to create a fusion bomb. You had to set off a fission bomb to set off a fusion bomb. And so when you're saying it's safe, like it is safe, but you've already detonated, you've already got to temperatures like close to the sun. So it's not.
Right. I mean, that's not how we make these in a reactor, right? Well, not with a fission bomb.
Not anymore. No.
Not anymore, no.
Yeah.
But I think we haven't been for 10 to 20 years now.
No, I mean, they've got it.
Right now it's like a lot of, like the engineering problem is like the magnetism of it. Like in some of these, you have like a plasma that you need to kind of continuously move around so it doesn't touch the walls. Mm. As you can imagine, if you have like a mini sun somewhere, you don't want that mini sun to touch anything, ideally.
I mean, it's also just the energy, the problem of energy dissipation, right? If it touches the walls, it cools down, and then the entire reaction doesn't work anymore. Anyway, what I find exciting about it is that this whole new world of nuclear reaction opened up to me, and I kind of, this happened also when I kind of found some astrophysics paper, which I kind of got lost in for a while. And I realized that these nuclear reactions aren't so different from chemical reactions, mm-hmm. and that they follow similar laws and regularities, and it's just something I had no idea about. And what I kind of like is that I bring something that I thought I know something about, and then you guys explain to me how it actually works.
Well, I wouldn't say we actually explain how it works. Take this with a huge caveat, please.
Okay, further research is needed here.
No, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as always. Now, anyway, I'm super excited about fusion, and I'm gonna. I guess now we'll research more probably right after this recording. Right, Philip, what did you bring?
Okay, I have something that brings a lot of joy to a lot of people. Money. And now I'm going to crowbar this into something that brings joy to everyone. So I was really uninspired and I looked at the IG Nobel Prizes. So if someone is not familiar with it, it's basically this Nobel Prize for really absurd pieces of research, but...
You know, people can't hear your air quotes, right?
Okay.
I can see your air quotes, but people can't hear it.
So I'm air quoting. So the idea is you have this piece of research that's really absurd and you're thinking like, why would anybody fund this? And then you read about the story and it actually makes a lot of sense. So the one from last year that I found like quite intriguing is that they looked at how dirty is money is it like really true that money is like this source of disease and stuff? That if you touch other people's money, that basically contaminates you with whatever they had. Mm-hmm. And do you want to take a guess who in Europe has the worst money, or maybe even in the world?
The dirtiest money, as in number of viruses and bacteria per...
So they were looking at bacteria specifically. But like what's the worst kind of money because you might get infected the easiest?
Is it to do with the material, like plastic versus mm-hmm. paper?
Yeah, exactly. Well, at least that's what they're thinking.
I suppose.
Wait, you said in Europe, because in Europe we all have the same currency.
Okay, so it's a European country, but they looked at the dollar and some Asian money as well.
Right. I mean, Canada, they have this plastic, mm-hmm. these plastic
I'm
bills.
I'm not sure if they tested that. Funny.
The UK's just moved to plastic. Oh, but yeah.
Tell us.
Tell us.
So the answer is Romania. And then dollar and euro are actually pretty good. And in terms of you getting infected from someone handing you like a piece of money is very limited for the euro.
And yeah. What does it mean Romania has dirty money? I mean, is it has more germs because of the material the bills and the coins are made of? Or
so they were not looking at the money itself in circulation. They were just looking at the material and how well A, the bacteria can survive on it, and B, how easy it is basically to transmit bacteria via it.
Okay, so they did not go out, take coins, and then take swaps of those. Okay, interesting.
So what's Romania's money made of that the euro and the dollar is not made of?
So what they are saying is that usually you have cotton money, and then what they do is they put in some kind of plastic that's really hard to forge. So they are thinking that plastic is somehow makes it easier for the bacteria to survive on it. But they didn't really test it. Why? So I think the good news for us personally is that the euro actually had a pretty good track record. Like of the three different strains that they tested, only one survived for a longer period of time. And most money is sterile again after like 6 or 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's actually pretty
interesting
good news.
Yeah. So then money isn't really dirty.
In terms of bacteria, not as much. So I think that's a happy story, right? It's not like, wow, this makes me happy. But it's like...
Maybe a story that's not so important in the future since, I mean, we're moving to cashless payments, right?
This reminds me, I saw a similar piece of research where they were testing notes for the amount of, like notes in circulation for the amount of cocaine on their surface. And it's like, it's something unbelievably high, like 60-80% of notes in circulation have had cocaine on them.
I think it's even higher, right? If you look at 50 euros and...
Yeah, so it scales for the value of the note, right? So like the low value notes don't have as much. But
For 500, it dropped off again. So I think like for 50 euros, it was the highest or something. There's also cool research looking at... the water that is washed into like treatment plants, and you can look at what kind of drugs are in there. So if you have like a rave, for example, you find all these like illegal drugs in it. And then if you look in certain cities, you can basically figure out what kinds of drugs people are using in the...
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. That's my story.
Nice. And why do you like it so much?
I think it was just cool. Like I was just looking through the list and... just with our current news, it was just a fun thing to have a look at. And I mean, it's obviously absurd to have like a look at how well bacteria is growing on money. Like it's not like you're going in the lab going, oh no, I need some more dollars to like get my E. coli.
And if you run out of agar plates, you take whatever you have, right?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. All right, let's get this to an end. What I wanted to announce in the end of this podcast was that we're going to have a break of the Fireside podcast as it was for now, because so far I was kind of the driving force of the entire thing. I did the editing, the hosting, planning, and all of this. And from now on, in the new podcast, I will have as equal hosts on my side, Philip and Chris. And I'm really excited to do this with both of you guys.
Yeah, I think we're really excited as well.
It's going to be cool. A podcast triumvirate.
So we're going to take a bit of a break to do the entire rebranding. Don't be surprised if in your podcast app you're going to find a new podcast that you didn't remember subscribing to. That's going to be us.
Do you want to unveil the name right now?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, keep it as
it's going to be a surprise.
We're going to have a lot of new exciting content. I'm excited about the work that Philip, or the ideas that Philip and Chris bring to the table. We're going to have exciting new guests. I hope many of them, and hopefully also some guests that you've heard before. And we're probably going to hear from us again in May or June. Stay excited and see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.